We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a headline from the Bedfordshire on Sunday, read by Cathy Clugston.
OAP caught shampooing his genitals on a bus claims he's no hardened criminal.
And our thanks to George Davies for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Katie Brand. And opposite them on my left, Miles Jupp and Bob Mills. Jeremy, who's seeing their jobs sail off into the sunset?
Well, hundreds of people all over the country, including Scotland and Bristol, but principally Portsmouth. And obviously there's a great history of ships, but there's no point in naval history gazing, obviously. Don't need as many warships because we're not having as many wars, which is good. It's just sad that people are losing their jobs. I mean, the Navy's very keen to point out that ships, you know, were useful, you know, that we needed somewhere to launch aircraft from during the attack on Libya. And admirals are saying, well, it's just as well that Italy was there. And I thought, well, yeah, Italy is always there. It wasn't just floating past at an opportune moment. The fact is, we don't really need as many ships as we used to, and we could import them. People say, well, we need a secure manufacturing base for ships here. And you say, well, you could import them. Well, can't import them. How would we get them here? You know, and presumably the arms industry would like us to have more wars. It's probably one of the reasons we've had so many is because of the arms industry. Without regular wars, they'd have to have car boot sales just to shift it all.
We'll have to buy our warships off the shelf, won't we? IKEA warships. You'll be one turret left over thinking, where does that go?
What's happened now is because Portsmouth has borne the brunt of it and Clydeside has got off relatively lightly by comparison, the accusation is being made that this is all to win the Scots over to staying in the Union. Because if they go independent, then Portsmouth gets the jobs back, basically, which means that the best thing that Portsmouth ship workers could do at the moment is move to Scotland temporarily and then vote for independence and then move back again.
I enjoyed the Sunday Telegraph's coverage of this because they
said... It's not words you often hear.
No, I know. But there was one little bit that just struck me. It said, things had got so bad that the defence giant was trying to reduce its footprint. Idea that there was a defence giant.
In Celtic mythology, the defence giant fought the Jolly Green Giant. And that's where the Giant's Causeway comes from.
It's very difficult, isn't it? Because, the ideal, obviously, is that all shipyards could be kept open. But then that involves, you know, there being a market for all these ships. It's, you know, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but in terms of just personally, and I haven't bought an advance warship for...
Months.
Must be months now, yeah. Really. I mean, you know, well, we've all had to tighten our belts, haven't we?
I don't know if you know this, but I am Chancellor at Portsmouth University, and owing to some misunderstanding, Obama has been listening in on my phone calls, which is... is to shut the last shipbuilding yards in Portsmouth with the loss of 940 jobs whilst keeping open the Scotstoun and Govan yards in Glasgow. There are accusations that the Scottish shipyards are being kept open to prevent a yes vote in the Scottish referendum, but the government denies it would ever be that cynical, manipulative, conniving, backstabbing and unfair, and I, for one, believe them. There will still be jobs in Portsmouth at the ship maintenance yards where shipwrights will lovingly grind off the Made in Scotland stamp. 2 points to Jeremy. Katie, who quietly tried to shift the blame for a scheme which has been universally discredited.
This is the... Ian Duncan Smith is pioneering his new universal credit, which is obviously the combination of all the previous credits for people having job seekers allowance or housing benefit and so on. They piloted it in April, and I don't think it went that well. And then they started rolling out gently from last month, and it's gone even worse. So I think basically for something which is so wholly controlled and managed and administered online, it appears they sort of forgot to do the website, which I can sympathise with, because doing a website can be a real pain. But I think if you're only going to pay desperate people in need of money via the website, you do really have to sort out the website first. But I don't know what they've designed it on. Maybe when they said tablet, maybe. I don't know how advanced Ian Duncan Smith is. Perhaps he has been trying to carve it out on a paracetamol. I don't know. I don't know. But also, you know, you do have to, if you're going to pay people buy an online system, you also have to make sure that the people you're paying are online as well, and not take away all their libraries where those people may have got online. Sorry, I'm trying not to just be rude about the government, but they do make me sick.
I did like Margaret Hodge, who's the woman on the Commons Public Account.
Margaret Hodge is now the nation's headmistress.
She's amazing, isn't she?
She just tells everyone off all the time, as far as I can tell.
I love it. She urged the government not to throw good money after the bad. And I thought, I had no idea we had any good money.
There's two fantastic bits of government speak that came out of this. The first one, I think Margaret Hodge said, you've lost, it's already cost, you've wasted £1.4 billion already. And the government's reaction to that was, I'm sorry, we don't recognise that sum. Yeah, but that's what you've, I'm sorry, we've had a look and we don't recognise it. And we refuse to look again at it. Sorry. And the other one, there's one man, horribly in this, there's one man that's been chay-hired to the rafters about it, a civil servant called Devereux, I think.
Robert Devereux.
Who seems to have been the man in charge. And a quote from, as some senior Tory politicians were, when they said, well, surely, are you going to sack him? Well, let's say this, his resignation will be accepted if it's offered.
He's the permanent secretary in the department, and what I loved is the committee members, this is alleged, okay, were told that by Duncan Smith's team that Robert Devereux was to be associated with the key failings. Do you not think it sounds like they're setting up a sort of a rock and roll band? Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Devereux and the key failings.
Everyone hates Ian Duncan Smith because Osborne says he's not very bright, and John Major quite subtly said it would only work if he is a genius, which is not proven.
There was a rumour, but I don't know if it's substantiated or true or anything, that Cameron tried to get rid of Ian Duncan Smith in the latest or a recent reshuffle, and Ian Duncan Smith just refused to move.
What,
is that right?
He just superglued his ass to the chair.
I think so, yeah. You know, like those protesters where they sort of superglued their own hands around the railings. I think perhaps he did that for the Department of Work and Pensions. I don't know.
Apparently, he did try and make him move. If you want the exact... Hansard of the meeting is, I want you out, make me, make yourself.
You can't.
I know you are, but what am I?
Yeah.
I know I am, but what are you?
Yeah, talking about yourself.
Yeah.
No idea.
But it's understandable, Duncan Smith not, I mean, if you tell someone to go and they don't want to go, they don't have to go. Anyone that's spent any amount of time trying to convince, for instance, a two-year-old child that they need to brush their teeth or put on a jumper, and 45 minutes later thinking, how come they still haven't brushed their teeth or put on a jumper? They've done literally everything else in the bloody house. And presumably, he just sort of, you know, looks at you and thinks, I could do that as well, can't I? You can drive any adult to the brink of total mental collapse just by saying, no. No.
It does sound like a nice place to work, though. There was a secretary who apparently had been authorised to make £23 million worth of payments. I don't know what's happening with that, but they are having a hell of a Christmas party this year, I'll tell you. It's going to be fantastic.
What, a secretary administering the universal credit?
A personal assistant. She has authorised £23 million worth of payments.
To whom?
I don't know, but it's a lot of tinsel.
Yeah.
A cross-party committee of MPs has severely criticised the Department for Work and Pensions for its implementation of the Universal Credit Scheme. And Ian Duncan Smith has been accused of trying to influence the committee to blame his permanent secretary, Robert Devereux, for any failings. Such an attempt would be against parliamentary rules, and you know what happens if you break them. You get promoted to health secretary. Ian Duncan Smith has promised the scheme will be rolled out by 2017, so long as his daylight savings reforms are implemented and next autumn the clocks are put back 2,860 hours. 2 points to Katie. Miles, who's had to diplomatically explain his nesting instinct?
Well, basically, on the top of the British Embassy in Berlin, they have, British spies have been building a nest. They have a, spies have, we don't all know this, but spies have a nesting instinct. And basically, they collect small bits of paper from dead letter drops and weave them together to make a nest.
You never see that in a James Bond film. You never see Daniel Craig collecting little bits of twig and fluff in his mouth.
he does. He has bits of Judy Dench's hair in it. Have you not ever seen it?
Yeah, yeah. That's why she's been killed off. She's been used up, all her hair.
Even trying to hide it. It was like a big white tent.
Well, this is
on
what
top of the roof.
Me.
I mean, it could have, for all we know, been an amateur baking program going on.
Apparently, it's come from Edward Snowden. And so the Germans have said, apparently, we've heard that's not a hot tub on your roof. and you're spying on us. Well, I'm sorry, but I know we live in a new Europe, and I know we're all one united people now, blah. But you Germans, we're going to keep a little eye on what you're up to.
Maybe. I quite liked that the British ambassador had to go over and talk to the German foreign ministry, and they were very keen to say that he was invited and not summoned. Yes. This was very important. But presumably, if the place was bugged, they didn't even need to bother to send a letter. I mean,
I've got friends who are spies, and I don't.
Have you?
Yes, and I don't know if it's a testament to how good they are at covering their tracks, but I know who all my friends who are spies are.
They tell you they're spies. They just don't want you to know that they're accountants. You say, what is it you do again? Oh, I can't really talk about it. It's very secret work for the government.
I think I've mentioned this before, but when I was a student at Cambridge, MI5 tried to recruit me. Yeah, no, not my language skills. I could easily fit in a suitcase. I think.
A lot of double bluffing goes on. You've told us they approached you, then. You've not told us what you said to them. What was your...
I'm a sleeper.
Yeah. Because I don't know if any regular listeners to this programme, it always confuses me, that thing you do when you suddenly go, and at the end of that round, the daffodils are blooming in Bucharest.
After allegations of a spy nest on the top of Britain's embassy, the ambassador to Berlin, Simon MacDonald, was called in to the German Foreign Ministry to offer an explanation. This is the first time Germany has called in a British ambassador in this way since the Second World War. Although, to be fair, we definitely were spying on them back then, and they were definitely up to something. The UK appears to be part of an English-speaking spy network along with the US, Canada, Australia and New Zealand, nicknamed Five Eyes, which is also the nickname for somebody wearing both a pair of glasses and a monocle. The German government are keen to reach a no-spy agreement with Great Britain. No spy is like I spy, but much quicker. 2 points to Miles. Bob, who's judged that it's time to draw a veil over a divisive issue?
Oh, is this Ken? Is this Ken Clark?
We love Ken.
Listen, I do. I'm a big fan of Ken Clark. I think he's a decent man. I think he's a human man. But every now and again, you just think, all right, Ken, shush now. Don't say anything. He had a perfectly reasonable point that he was called upon to make, and that is that the niqab, the veil that Muslim women wear over their face, there are certain places where that's not really suitable. And one of these places is a court of law, because if you're in court of law as a witness or anything, the way that the legal system works in this country is that the jury must have the right to make to pass judgment on what you're saying and whether they believe you or anything. And you can't do this unless you can see somebody fully. And that's a perfectly reasonable statement. And if it had just stopped there. Because, as he says, it's not fair for the prosecution or the defence if one of the people who's giving evidence is wearing, I don't know, some kind of bag on their head.
I love that. He said the full veil was like a kind of bag. I want him to describe more clothing. Trousers, they're like kind of leg sacks with holes. Gloves, like putting your hands into woolly spiders.
I'm glad that they stopped the interview and stopped him before he says, and as for that other thing, that whole big ninja thing, no.
People aren't doing this a lot. Aren't there more important things we should worry about that people are wearing? Like red trousers, like pink trousers, like mustard cords, like tan brogues with jeans. Are these not the sort of things we should be addressing?
That is the anguished cry of a man brought up in Hampshire, though, isn't it?
Trying to come up with instances when you shouldn't wear a niqab, and court of law is about the only one that they can really think of where it would actually be of any significance. So people say, what if someone wearing a veil went into a bank? Well, what? It's not going to worry you unless they've got a shotgun, is it? And if they have got a shotgun, you're not going to say, oh my God, she's got a veil, quick! You can't see her teeth, everybody on the ground. What about when people wear sunglasses?
What
and
about
you can't see, well, you can't see their eyes, and the eyes are the windows of the soul.
It's really rare to wear sunglasses in court while giving evidence.
Not necessarily. I bet Ray Charles wore sunglasses in court.
What was he charged with?
Drug possession. He was charged with drug possession, and he went to court, and he probably wore his sunglasses.
Do you know, I don't know if this is true or not, but I do love this story. It is said that Stevie Wonder had a very large estate and was taught to drive the 3 miles from the gate, the main gate entrance, right up to the house, and used to terrify guests by appearing at the gate in his car going, "Get in, I'll take you up to the house." It's true. I don't know. It's a wonderful story. Lord Thomas, the Lord Chief Justice of England and Wales, is to issue guidance about whether Muslim women are allowed to wear veils in court. Kenneth Clark has waded into the debate, saying he thought it was a most peculiar costume for someone to adopt in the 21st century, before being shown a Miley Cyrus video and rapidly changing his mind. Women in this country can, of course, dress in any way they choose, as Theresa May and I demonstrate at different ends of the spectrum. But at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Katie have got 4 points, but so too have Miles and Bob. We start round two with an update spotted on the National Rail Inquiry's website.
Tuesday, the 29th of October, First Capital Connect are expecting to run a near-normal service. Passengers are advised not to travel.
To Edward Cabrera for sending us that. Miles, listen to this.
Well, that was...
Yes?
I was going to say that was Pink Floyd when they were very, very young.
See, it's not really a musical quiz. That's really... Oh. Yes, so extra point to Miles. That's a random extra point for you there. Miles, who wants to take... Oh, wait a minute, I'll do. Miles, what song was that?
That was called The Wall.
No.
All right. What was it called?
Another Brick in the Wall.
Brick in the Wall. It's just called Brick in the Wall.
Oh, right, well...
Another in brackets.
Taking that point away.
Okay, so I'm... Does that mean I'm out now?
You're out.
I'm out.
This is the worst episode of Nevermind the Buzzcocks I've ever seen.
And I get your counter to put into the machine.
Yeah. Just had a brief flurry of feeling what it'd be like to be on Radio 2.
I did a panel show on Radio 2 once, and they had to wake up a member of the audience because he was snoring so loudly it was being picked up on the microphones.
I was once interviewed by, what was his name? Stewpot.
Ed Stewpot Stewart.
Ed Stewart.
What's happened to him?
I don't know. And it was a quiz. I got the last question wrong. I had to name 3 famous Danish entertainers. And I got Hans Christian Andersen and Victor Borge. And I couldn't come up with the third, and it was me. I could have won a pen. Miles, who wants to take baby steps in education reform?
This is one of the Ofsted people. I think the...
Lady Morgan.
Lady Morgan, probably one of my favourite of the main ladies. Lady Morgan, she thinks that children should start school not at the age of 4, but at the age of 2, which leads me to think that she's probably got young children herself. And I suddenly thought, well, if I can't use my powers for good, at least I could use them for childcare. Yeah, it's a sensible thing. Children are starting school at the age of 4, and some people haven't spent any time in nursery up to that point, and maybe at home haven't been picking up any sort of literacy or numeracy skills. So her feeling is, well, perhaps people should start school even earlier, and then by the time that they are the age that they should be going to school, then they have done a bit of school already. Other people think, No, that is why you go to school. You go to school to start the learning things. I mean, it's a bit like saying, well, look, if we have a meeting at 5 o'clock, I mean, why don't we have the meeting at 4 o'clock, and then by 5 o'clock we'll already have had a meeting? There's an element of that sort of maths. But Rowan Williams, who I always admired sort of follically, has...
He had one of those heads. If you turned it upside down, he'd look the same.
He's part of a group called Save Our Childhood.
Yeah.
I think for him, perhaps it's a vain dream. That's that ship has sailed, Rowan. But they think that, people shouldn't start school until they're seven, which suggests that he doesn't have...
Children in Scandinavia do not start school until they are seven. I think before that, they're not tall enough to get through the snowdrifts. I think it's...
You can have nursery, can't you? You have nursery before seven, don't you? They don't. Kids just don't stay at home watching CBeebies, having their brains turned to mush by failed actors in lurid waistcoats.
I think you've got a slightly skewed view of how talented some of the people who appear on CBeebies are, Jeremy. Some of them probably have slightly more diverse property portfolios than yourself as a result. I make that point purely objectively.
But if children are going to start school at two, are there going to be exams for two-year-olds? What, are we going to start a trend for wipe-clean exam papers?
You can turn over your fuzzy fold farm set now.
I really like the idea of educational creches in schools. I think that's a stroke of brilliance.
What? But what kind of questions are you going to ask the children? What about a maths question? If I give you three chocolate buttons, two-year-old maths question, okay? I give you three chocolate buttons, I then give you another five chocolate buttons, why are you still lying on the floor crying?
Yeah.
You are. The only question you want a child to be able to answer is, where are Mummy's car keys? That's it. That's the only...
They're talking about people from disadvantaged background, or as we used to call it in the old days, working class backgrounds. Right? When, by the time they get to school at five, they're behind other kids when they get to school at five. To me, the answer is slightly more simple than that. From a certain background, when you have a kid, you should go to school.
Yeah.
Well, leave the kid at home, the kid's fine. Basically, as long as they're in one of them big square things and there's a TV somewhere, then they'll be fine.
You can get those crates at Pets at Home.
Yeah, and then you go to school. And then when you come back, then you can pass on this information to your kids so that when your kid's five, it'll go to school and it won't be behind all the other kids.
Yeah, but the advantage of sending a two-year-old as opposed to an adult is once they've eaten all that glue, dried pasta and glitter, they won't want any tea. At least they'll have eaten well. My children are all grown up. I still read to them.
Do you?
Every month, sit down. Who called Australia for an hour? Who voted on X Factor 16 times? Lady Morgan, the chair of Ofsted, has suggested that children should be allowed to attend school from the age of two in order to counteract youngsters from poorer backgrounds falling behind. The idea is that teachers can spend more time with the children of low earners. Low earners like teachers. Lady Morgan described the suggestion as big, bold and brave, while the Preschool Learning Alliance described it as beyond belief, with neither appearing to have access to the alphabet beyond the letter B. Supporters of the plan welcomed it as a bold move, while critics had a screaming fit and refused to put their shoes on. At 2 points to Miles. Katie, who's hoping that millions will flock to his survey?
The Pope.
Mm.
I don't think I'm alone in this, but I've got a bit of a crush on the new Pope. I think he's quite an alpha man, the new Pope, isn't he? He's kind of...
Don't look at me, I really would not be... Would not be the one to back you up on this. Okay.
No, I am. I
like the frocks, that's all I'm...
Well, I mean, as I did a theology degree, I did it very badly, but I still turned up most of the time. And I was a Christian when I was a teenager as well. I was a mad fundamentalist Christian for a period of time. And nothing will stop that like a theology degree. my parents were very relieved. But the new Pope, Pope Francis, is doing some quite incredible things. They've sent a survey out to all the bishops, and then the bishops are then tasked with getting information from their congregations about contraception, about divorce, about remarrying people in churches who have been divorced and so on. And the Pope is, again, reportedly making great strides in perhaps making a woman a cardinal as well. So it's really quite thrilling what he's doing. And
I have to say, it is very nice to see a more progressive Pope. It always felt, I don't know, felt rather odd being told I shouldn't be in a same-sex relationship by a gang of old men in shiny dresses. It's just... but this thing about the woman. I mean, that's incredible. Professor Linda Hogan, they're suggesting as...
She is one of the top candidates. It's a bit slippery because apparently you don't have to be ordained to be a cardinal in Roman Catholicism.
They're not clergy at all, cardinals.
No, they don't have to be.
They're just bouncers.
Yes, you know, women have always had a place in the church originally, and it was only a few hundred years later that women were eradicated from the church, and these kind of rules came in about how women were not allowed to hold a central position in preaching and so on. So it's good to get back to basics.
I don't know, there were women lording it over everybody in an institution as old as modern civilization. It's oh, wait a minute, that's a letter, an old letter from when I started chairing this show. Hang on a minute. The Vatican is undertaking a worldwide opinion poll of Catholics' views on issues such as same-sex couples and contraception. A senior Vatican official stressed that the Pope remains loyal to the vision of the family where a man and a woman join together and procreate children. Except, of course, when he's on a papal visit where what happens on tour stays on tour. The results will be discussed at an extraordinary synod of bishops in 2014. An extraordinary synod is like an ordinary one but ends with a foam party. Meanwhile, a married Irish woman, Linda Hogan, has been tipped to become the first female cardinal. Linda Hogan is a theologian, wrestler, and was married to Crocodile Dundee. It's possible Wikipedia let me down at the last bit. 2 points to Katie. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Katie have got 8 points, but so too have Miles and Bob. Before we start round three, here is a description from the Sky TV Guide.
11 p.m. Booze Patrol Australia, action-packed reality series with the police force in New South Wales. The evening becomes confusing when officers arrest two men with the same first name.
Our thanks to Andrew Beckett for sending us that. Katie, where will drivers have to face the future of advertising?
Tesco.
Ooh.
I don't know. There seems to have been this idea that you will have your face scanned by an interactive screen while you buy petrol, and then you'll have adverts tailored to your face while you wait to pay for your petrol. Seems to be, to me, to be the biggest deterrent for going into Tesco petrol stations I've ever heard. But they've announced it very enthusiastically, as if everyone's going to be delighted. Alan Sugar's company is responsible for making these screens, and it's a division run by his son, who said something really wildly enthusiastic, like, it's going to be like that film Minority Report. which sort of reminded me, because I thought Minority Report was like a bad thing. Like, it was like a satire, wasn't it, about how awful it would be if this sort of thing happened.
Because in that film, isn't there, there's a scanner that beams adverts tailored to Tom Cruise, isn't
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly, yes.
Yes, and yet, strangely, none of them were for stack heel shoes or divorce lawyers.
No.
It films you while you're buying petrol.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then based on your face, it says, you know, so the advert would be, need a loan. Just on £80, filling up a Panda, Fiat Panda. No, thank you.
But the Tesco spokeswoman said, I think slightly hazy understanding of the technology, said, it's going to be very sophisticated because based on things like the length of your hair, we'll be able to tell your gender. So I think you should expect some rather interesting adverts, Sandy, based on the length of your hair. I don't know whether some sort of...
I'm going to confuse the system by wearing a stocking over my head and carrying a shotgun.
So Tesco's are going to have a camera, and judging what people look like, they will be able to think what sort... Well, good luck at 3 o'clock in the morning in Free and Barnet. Is a freak show. You don't even know what species some of these people are.
Someone will have punched a screen within 2 weeks of this game starting.
What you looking at?
Yeah.
Need something to calm you down?
Yeah. Screens made by Lord Sugar's Amscreen that determine the age and gender of shoppers are to be installed in Tesco petrol stations to tailor advertisements to queuing customers. The system will record the person's age, gender, what they bought, and how long they watched an advert on screen. I say system, it's the winner of The Apprentice with a pen and a stopwatch. Jeremy, why are culture vultures now a native species?
Well, apparently, we always think that we're not very cultivated and that the French are far more cultivated and the Italians go to opera all the time. But actually, it's us. We are the most cultivated people in Europe or something. We're more, yeah, we're very...
No, the Scandinavians were way ahead, but...
All right, if you count, if you ignore all the other people in Europe, the British are by far the most cultivated. But apparently we are. In surveys where you say how many cultivated things you've done in a month, we do more than the French.
But one of the big categories was visiting historical monuments.
Yeah.
And the trouble is, I don't know what qualifies as a historical monument in this country. Because, like, I mean, you could just drive through Winchester and technically you've visited a historical monument, haven't you?
I think you have to lick it.
Also,
they don't let you do it now.
Yeah, one of the categories was dance. Have you witnessed a dance performance? I think far too many people think that Strictly is part of that. An opera also. You say you come round where I live. Do you see much of the opera? Oh, I'll never miss it, mate. You got Emmerdale and you got your two Corries.
So it wasn't a level playing field because it said 83% of Greeks hadn't visited a museum in the last year. Well, that's because all their best stuff is in our museums, isn't it? Britons are more cultured than many of their European neighbours, according to a European Union survey of cultural activity. The Swedes topped the league, but who cares, because we beat the French. Whee! 39% of British people have been to the theatre in the past 12 months, although that drops to 8% if you don't count Panto. The British...
Is that true? Oh, no!
It is. The British are ranked fourth best at going to the ballet, visiting museums, and lying about what they do in their spare time. The Swedes and the Danes came first and second, with the Swedish only just beating the Danes. Oh, if I'd only finished my ballet about the decline of the pickled herring industry, we definitely would have nailed it. 2 points to Jeremy. Miles, who wants to show e-cards the red card?
Ah, well, this is probably one of my top 15 favourite bishops from the current...
Yeah. Do you know, genuinely, you're probably the only person I know who would have a list.
Yeah, I think top 15, probably okay. About number 13. I don't know who yours is, but mine is the Bishop of Hertford, who is who's a right reverend, apparently. Don't want to be a gossip, but that's what they call him. He's fronting a campaign. Presumably, he's got friends and relatives who sent him those sort of e-Christmas cards, and he thinks, I don't want internet Christmas greetings. I want you to knock on my front door and give me a hug. I'm a bishop. I'm like one of the main 15 bishops, according to some people. reach out and touch me. So that's, yeah, he
just
wants
to tread carefully now, yes. Okay?
Really, I've got a theology degree, I'm sure.
You've both got theology degrees?
Apparently so, have you?
What are the choices?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. What are the choices? Well, you can do English. There's one, I think there's an engineering is another one, yeah. Must be about six. I mean, it's quite possible that this man has been he's been lobbied by new shareholders in the Royal Mail saying, could you have a word for proper Christmas cards?
I think it's more to do with the amount of money for charity that the church makes through people buying the Christmas cards, isn't it?
Yeah. You obviously got the most cynical theology degree.
I think there's going to be newspaper articles complaining about this, big headlines in the Hertfordshire Gazette saying, Miles Jupp bashes Bishop.
The E ones, I know it's wrong, but they sound good. If you've not ever had one, oh, they're a little story, nothing. There's nothing, just a snow scene. That's not, oh, hang on, the bird's moving. And it takes off, and then some classical music, and it goes through the forest and snow falls, and they're really, really pretty.
You are so easily pleased.
I would rather have an e-card than the, and she's going to kill me, but it's true, than the Christmas card that my wife and my two children got last year from my mother. Merry Christmas to all at number 25. True.
We tried to do one of those personalised cards last year, and we took a photo of the family and had it put on some cards, but the family we photographed sued for invasion of privacy.
It's not good when people put pictures of themselves on their cards, is it? It's all right to have a bauble or Jesus, but a picture of you, that's a bit solipsistic, isn't it? You are Jesus. Or a robin. Then it's fair enough. If you're a robin, you can do a selfie and send that. Actually, the bishop said the best thing you can do is actually not only send real cards, but take them round.
That's the worst thing that can possibly happen. Because the whole Christmas card etiquette is you have to have a day in lieu so that you can, oh, right, we better send them one quick.
Exactly, yeah.
They hand it to you in your hand, you say, oh, we've got yours as well. Wait there a second. And then the opening and closing of drawers. Nobody wants that nightmare.
Here's your card. And then waiting there, like, I'm not inviting you in. I don't want... just put it through the door like a normal person.
And the other thing where they squirt lighter fluid through and set fire to it.
Okay, it was one time.
It is personal, though, that.
Yeah.
Nothing says Christmas like a card from a couple called Val and Peter who you've no bloody recollection of meeting. Bishop of Hartford, the Right Reverend Paul Bayes, has urged people to send traditional Christmas cards rather than e-cards, group emails or Facebook messages. British charities earn £50 million from Christmas cards each year. The bishop argues that charities need the revenue from their Christmas cards to support the people who've gone bankrupt buying stamps. A survey by card company Moo found that most people preferred receiving a written letter to an email because it was more personal and easier to dispose of when being investigated for phone hacking. Right, 2 points to Miles. Bob, who rates girls on film?
This is the, I think it's the Swedes. I've brought the Bechdel test in as if it's a new thing. It was a fantastic, strip cartoons in America. She wrote a feminist cartoon strip. And one of the strip cartoons was a thing called The Rule. And it was, they were just talking in the strip cartoon about films. About what was an acceptable in the feminist world for a film to be, and it was it has to have two women in it. Oh, that's okay. Lots of films have no. They have to have a conversation. Well, no, that's still quite a not about man. Oh, and the joke was there are very few films there. And
they also
the Swedes,
both have to have a name.
Well, no, the Swedes, apparently, when they've brought in, they've added that it has to be a featured character with a name. In the original one, it was just two women had to have a conversation, but it had to be about something other than the man in the film.
I never thought I'd live to see the day Bob Mills gives a feminist lecture on...
a group of independent cinemas in Sweden are going to give them a rating based on the Bechdel, which is A, B, and A is come and see it if you like, but it doesn't do this.
In real life, I speak to other women all the time. We barely ever talk about men in anything other than the most pitying tones.
I have to say, actually, though, I have seen a lot of Scandinavian films that only... feature women, and they certainly don't talk about men.
I'm sure
it was some of my early work, Miles.
Oh, it's nice. It gives me a lovely thrill every time I dust off the old Betamax.
I'm sure.
Is that a euphemism?
Citizens, Sandy, to escape your lurid past.
Absolutely.
You know what people are thinking now is, well, I knew one of them was going to go there, but I really didn't think it was going to be the posh bloke.
A cinema chain in Sweden has started rating films according to gender bias using something called the Bechdel test. The Bechdel test is a means of gauging sexism in the media. For something to pass, it must have two named women who have to have a conversation that isn't about a man. My house, then. Cartoonist Alison Bechdel first introduced the test in a 1985 comic strip. And as a testament to the power of art to create social change, just 28 years later, four cinemas in Sweden are using it. final scores. Let's hear the cuttings. The teams have brought along Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Esther Dyer, and it's from Kangaroo Care, which is an obstetric magazine for marsupials. No, it's an article called Kangaroo Care from Calderdale and Huddersfield NHS Trust. Kangaroo Care. Dressed only in a nappy, baby is held in skin-to-skin contact against mother's chest between her breasts, snug inside her clothing, often for hours. Fathers can do this too.
Ms. Brand.
This is sent in by Martin Turner. And it's a piece in the Times about sexist Freshers Week events. Sarah Pine, the women's officer at Oxford University Student Union, said, "One drinking society in Oxford uses the motto, 'We will deflower you,' for introductory alcohol-filled events for first-year students. They're unregistered groups without any way of outsiders holding their members accountable."
Mr. Jupp.
Stephen Kenyon has sent this in. He lives in Dorchester. It's from the adverts in the local newspaper. For sale, electric guitar, an amp, a Fender Squire Affinity guitar in excellent condition and bought as present for obnoxious teenager by doting grandmother and barely used due to laziness.
Mr. Mills.
This is sent in by Joy Bryan, although I heard it, and I know a lot of us heard it. It was a trailer that was aired on Radio 4's Today programme. What makes a man kill? Weekday afternoons on BBC Radio 4.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Katie have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Miles and Bob with 13. Before we leave you, here is a question from the Test Your Trivia quiz spotted in Dubai's 7 Days newspaper sent to us by Kevin Griffiths.
Name the year. Charles de Gaulle Airport opens in Paris. Turkey invades Cyprus for the second time. And ABBA win the 1974 Eurovision Song Contest.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Katie Brand, Miles Jupp and Bob Mills. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clugston. The chair script was read by Lucy Clark, Rodri Crooks and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and Bronya Maguire. The producer was Sam Michelle.